You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Jim Lance, you brought that iconic scene in motion picture history to mind in the last hour. Well, those who can handle the truth,
I'm tuned in here.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
As strong as Garrett Snuff, isn't it?
The start to this year has been noteworthy. I mean, you go back, this is just our third show of the year. We've got two in the books and one currently in progress. You go back to our first night of broadcasting in the year of our Lord 2023. Three guests, one hour after the other, Jason Kessler, Chris Cantwell, and Harry Cooper. Last week, of course, back with us, Representative Steve King and Lauren Witzke. That was a great 1-2 punch in the second and third hours last week, and not to mention our Brazilian correspondent. So that brings us up to six guests in 6 hours to start the new year.
I tell you what, we've never gotten off to such a fast-paced start.
And then, of course, tonight you've already heard from Sasha Rossmuller in Germany. I would say our first international guest, but we had our correspondent in Brazil just last week, both talking about similar things, either legitimate uprisings.
Bob Dylan said, the times they are changing.
And then Jim Lancia. Jim, what a great guy.
See, he's age-proof and waterproof and, weatherproof. He just,
I tell you what, I would trust him doing the policing now over any young buck.
I'm going to suggest him to be the new police chief for the city of Memphis.
Well, you know,
although I wouldn't want to do that to him.
What a joke, though. I mean, the city of Memphis is such a joke. But
Black woman. Apparently, you have to be a black woman to be a police chief in a major American city today.
But, you know, it's not just that. You go back a few years ago, and Black Lives Matter terrorists literally shut down the Hernando de Soto Bridge. I'm surprised, the way, that they haven't renamed that yet, because he was certainly a great conqueror and a great explorer and a great man of the West.
The George Floyd Bridge.
But they shut down this major interstate artery, one of the most important interstate arteries in the whole country, Interstate 40.
And I don't think that was an action. I think that was a test run.
So you had all these Black Lives Matter malcontents go on the bridge, the Hernando de Soto Bridge. It's the iconic Mississippi River Bridge that spans downtown Memphis. And
traffic up towards almost to Little Rock.
Going in that direction, and to Nashville going in the opposite direction. And what did the police and the law enforcement do? They went out and they met with the Black Lives Matter terrorists, and they locked arms with them and gave them an audience with the mayor so that they could convey their
demands.
Called
kissing ass.
What do you do? Keith, go to the I-40 bridge right now in downtown Memphis, stop traffic, and see if you get an audience with the mayor. So this is what we're talking about, and this is what we're talking about with Jim Lancia. It's just, there is no law.
I mean, it's like the Wild West, only without principled people involved in it. Now, this is just...
Imagine a bunch of white protesters shutting the bridge down for some conservative cause and them not going to jail, which is where all of these people should have been. They weren't just shutting down the bridge. They were jumping on top of transport trucks, jumping on top of hoods.
If you do that, you better bring your inner tube, because they're going to throw you off the bridge and into the river.
So this is that goes back several years now in Memphis, to let you know where the law enforcement, so-called law enforcement of this city, stands. So I don't know. I wish we had a lot of cops like Jim Lancia.
I tell you what, our leadership needs knee pads, you know?
Well, it's worse than that. They're in league with them. I mean, that's all there is to it. They're not servicing them. They are them. Anyway, breakneck pace to start 2023. We mentioned all of the guests, the great guests that have been with us so far this year. And last week, a national news story was born, and it all started right here and with national-conservative.com. You hear the ads that we run for the Conservative Citizens Foundation. You can go to their website at americafirst.com, as you hear in the ad, or you can go to
M-E-R-I-K-A.
Well, MERICA1ST. You got to listen to the ad. I spell it out. But anyway, or you can go to nationalconservative.com. They are one and the same. So last week, we got wind from a friend of ours who has asked to be remain nameless, but he told me about the Sheila Jackson Lee bill. I call up Steve King. Steve King hadn't heard about it yet. He heard about it from me, who heard about it from our
embedded sources.
That's right. And so Steve King came on to talk about it, and Lauren Witzke talked about it last week. And then while they are talking about it, national-conservative.com, our friend Kyle Rogers there, writes an article about it. Now, I don't know if the article came out before, during, or after our interview. I didn't see it until after our show wrapped last week, but in any event, it was all happening simultaneously.
In other words, it hit. It was a bomb, and it bleeded.
And
it had ripples everywhere. I mean,
we have Steve King on. Then Lauren Boebert posts the direct article to nationalconservative.com, our sponsor, and it gets like 8 million views, and then it goes national. It goes national. Tucker Carlson covers it, and this is Tucker Carlson covering it, and you heard it here first here on TPC.
Jackson Lee is famous in Washington for being the single most obnoxious member of Congress. Now, that's a title that, as you can imagine, has many contenders. But Sheila Jackson Lee stands alone. "Don't you know who I am?" she once screamed at a flight attendant in the first class cabin on a Continental flight. "I am Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. Where is my seafood meal?" In the 1990s, during a visit to NASA, Sheila Jackson Lee demanded to see the flag that astronauts had planted on Mars. When gently informed that no human being has ever been to Mars because it's very far away, Lee flew into a rage. She accused NASA of racism and pointed out her membership on the, quote, science committee in Congress.
Hold on, he's not done.
Sheila Jackson Lee has devoted her entire political career, indeed her entire life, to a single cause, shrieking about white racism. That's what Sheila Jackson Lee does for a living. Here's a selection.
"Institutional racism and systemic racism taints and spoils the way that America treats, in one instance, African Americans, and other instances, minorities.
The dastardly impacts of white nationalism, white supremacy, and outright racism. Racism is a national security threat.
Racism is a national security threat.
Racism is a national security threat.
Institutional racism does exist, and until we accept that, we will not finish our job.
We will not elect a chief bigot of the United States of America.
Our system is such that it then allows Americans, people, to act in instances in a racist manner."
And continuing on.
"Racism, you see, is a national security threat. It's a national security threat." "Really, Sheila Jackson Lee? Tell us how racism is a national security threat. Speak slowly. We've got plenty of time." But of course, she won't do that. She's got no argument. She's got no facts. She doesn't even have a sincere belief in what she's saying.
Skip the break.
It's absurd, and she knows it. And by the way, Sheila Jackson Lee doesn't want to protect a country she despises from national security threats. Why would she want to do that? No, that's not the point. What she's doing here every day is leveling a racial attack, a blood libel, against an entire group of Americans while simultaneously pretending to be the victim of attacks from that same group. "Stop hitting me," she howls as she punches you in the face. It's such a common tactic at this point, used constantly by Al Sharpton, by the ADL, by so many others, that you may not even notice it anymore. But it's still disgusting, it's still immoral, it's still divisive.
And one more, Keith.
"Racism, you see,
is a national security threat." Racism is a national security threat.
Hold on, let me find it. Well, in any event, he goes on to talk at length about this so-called, what was the bill called? It was some asinine, nonsensical thing, standing against white supremacy, whatever it was. But it was basically, well, we talked about it last week with the congressman.
Oh,
and
it has a,
the former, you know, nominee for United States Senate.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
But he gets into that, and he got into that because, well,
at least partly
because of this program, certainly because of National Conservative, because they were the ones who wrote the article that Lauren Boebert linked to.
Brad Griffin brought up what we discussed, and I'm about to discuss again. Why do we have a Taylor Lee, like her. What's her first name? Sheila?
Sheila Jackson Lee. Can you imagine if you had the last name Jackson or Lee, and you had them both together, you'd think that the...
Her name ought to be Mandingo. You know, that's it.
But it should have been Sheila Mandela King.
Or Mandingo King or whatever. But anyway, what this shows, how did a person like this get to be elected to the U.S. Congress? Answer, Voting Rights Act of 1965. That's where all of these congressmen and congresswomen that have had gerrymandered districts created for them by supplicant Democrats and Republicans to hopefully deflect the accusation of racism. That's how they got in there. It's basically what they did with the 65 Voting Rights Act. They mandated gerrymandering for the benefit of blacks.
You mentioned the great Brad Griffin, our good friend. Go to OccidentalDescent.com. Look at that.
It looks like a Rorschach ink blot.
You said that last week, but go look. You said that to Lauren Witzke, who, by the way, what a pistol Lauren was. And Steve King, Lauren Witzke in second and third hours last week, that is top-notch
Of course, we have another example closer to home. Here in Memphis, we have Steve Cohen.
But go look at Brad's article at OccidentalDescent.com. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee defends the Get Whitey Act of 2023. Her district doesn't make any sense at all. Look at the I can't even, Keith, try to explain this in words, what this looks like, besides what you just said. I mean, literally try to explain that picture. You got to see it for yourself, folks.
It looks like an ink blot.
You said that. But, I mean, describe, like, the shape. I mean, what is that?
It looks like it's got a Texas longhorn
head in the
middle of it.
Yes.
And it's just colored around the edges. That's apparently all of the black
That's
neighborhoods of Houston, okay? And see what they're doing with this, what they're doing is they are making us provide black people with totally, nonsensical districts so that they can have more black faces or more radical left people like Steve Cohen in Memphis serving in Congress. In red states like Tennessee and Texas, if our Republican state legislature had a set of cojones, what would have happened is they would have gotten rid of all of these gerrymandered districts once they were allowed to do that by the partial repeal of the Voting Rights Act. And that's what needs to be. We don't need to. We have a razor-thin margin in the House, and we're behind the eight ball. The Democrats have a majority in the Senate. We need to get rid of the Sheila Jackson Lees and the Steve Cohens and replace them with people that will at least not be antithetical and inimical to the white Republican base. What is wrong with you, Republican state legislators? You got rid of Jim Cooper in Nashville because he was a white Gentile. You can't get rid of Steve Cohen because he's not a white Gentile. You can't get rid of Sheila Taylor Jackson because...
Sheila Jackson Lee. Sheila Mandela King.
Yeah, whatever it is. Whatever it is... But nonetheless,
what qualifications does she have to be in Congress? I mean, tell me. Have you ever listened to her speak? Have you ever seen anything that she accomplished? Why is she there?
Well, I think she represents her constituency pretty well. She's got a chip on her shoulder, and he has no intelligence or facts to back it up with.
I got to tell you, this is why I tossed it to you, Keith. You nailed it. You nailed what this district looked like. I could have never come up with anything that creative to describe this. But if you go to OccidentalDescent.com, OccidentalDescent.com. We should have had Brad on tonight. I'm half of mine to call him up right now, but I won't do that. But go to his article, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee defends the Get Whitey Act of 2023. Not only will you see a picture of her district, which, as Keith said, it looks like the logo for the Texas Longhorns colored in with green green around the periphery, and that's her district. It's that periphery around the Longhorns.
We have a lot more like John Lewis, the late John Lewis,
like
who died recently. He had the same type of gerrymandered district created for him.
Then what sense does that make? I mean, it's not a logical
basically
shape.
Basically, what it is, the only thing it is, they should have called it, rather than the Voting Rights Act of 65, the Black Pandering Act of 1965. That's what they did.
This looks like...
And they're taking positions away in Republican red states that should be going to Republicans and white representatives that will represent their white base.
Imagine the V-Dare logo. That's another one. The V-Dare logo. It looks like it looks more like the dough at V-Dare,
yeah,
with the outer margins colored in. That's her district. Anyway, if you go to that article, you can see the district. And I thought about playing a clip from this. So
she is so pompous, by the way. She is just an insufferable person. She's not only stupid, you know, what she reminds me of, I forget.
What's her IQ? If you put her and Joy Reid's IQs together, what do you think?
I think you might be bumping up around 100. But let me tell you, the thing is, the people that I forget who said it's better to be thought stupid and to remain silent than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Well, that's what Sheila Jackson Lee is, and that's what John Lewis was. We have
John Lewis. I mean, that whole thing, that whole Bloody Sunday. I was on this Edmund Pettus Bridge last year. I went down to Selma. I had a great time, but that whole thing was. I want to curse right now.
I just watched it on the tape today. And they well,
what
like
were you doing watching it on tape today?
I don't know. I came across it and I saw it, and you would have thought it would look like the St. Valentine's Day's Massacre in Chicago under Al Capone. Instead, they just allowed themselves to be pushed over because they wanted to create.
I tell you that was the luckiest crack on the skull anybody in world history has ever gotten, because that got John Lewis into Congress.
Well, he probably did. Grievous damage to the billy club that hit him. Putting a brain like his in a skull like him. Putting a brain like his in a skull like that is like putting a brass quarter in Fort Knox.
Well, if you have any question about it, let me make it clear. I stand with Bull Connor and George Wallace, whose son, by the way, you know, we revisited that interview with George Wallace Jr. back in December. We've been on the air so long, we forget some of the things we do. This is a very special show.
Well, you know, Elvis has been in the news again, and I loved his comment that Elvis called up his father and told him that rather than being the liberal he's portrayed to be in this new movie about him, instead, he actually told George Wallace that he had a Wallace for President sign up in the front yard of Graceland.
Yeah, that's the thing. That movie we talked about, that Gregory Hood wrote a fantastic article about it for Amren.com, where in the movie, the new movie that came out about a year or two ago about Elvis, he's portrayed as this civil rights pioneer, and he went to the black areas of Memphis to get guidance and counsel, and blacks were his, you know, guiding light. But the real Elvis, as told to us by George Wallace's son on this very broadcast, the real Elvis had a Wallace for President yard sign in the lawn of Graceland during the height of the Wallace segregation era.
And called up George Wallace and pledged his support to
that
him.
Didn't make the movie, though. But anyway, back to Sheila Jackson Lee and Joy Reid. After TPC and NationalConservative.com got this out there in a big way, Lauren Boebert, yes, of course, she's the one who tweeted out the National Conservative article, Steve King. And by the way, if you go to that National Conservative article that Boebert tweeted out, there's a clip of Steve King on this program. Yeah. Anyway, so it got in the news in a big way. Joy Reid is interviewing Sheila Jackson Lee, and you can see it at Brad's article at OccidentalDescent.com that we've been referencing, and you've got these two. One's wearing fluorescent purple lipstick, and then you've got Sheila Jackson Lee, and they're mocking Tucker Carlson, and they're mocking what they call the great replacement theory, talking about how anti-Semitic it is for whites to say there's a great replacement theory. But as you said, Keith, you're dealing with people with room temperature IQs. I don't guess they can see that if the United States, the population of the United States of America in the 1960s was 90% white, and now it's 60% or less white, and probably closer to 50%. Yes, I do believe
that
there is a demographic change there. I don't know if they can do that elementary math. They're both black. I thought about playing the clip, but I'm not going to give away precious airtime to
they're
two black women.
Often in error, but never in doubt. Look at Joy Reid. She looks like a mule eating briar. She's got her little white teeth standing there, and she's smugly smiling. And look at Sheila Jackson Lee is up there with her eyes closed, like she is just the best thing since floating soap. These people,
I was
going to
play a clip. They are idiots. 90%, 60% is less than 90%. That's not a theory. That's a fact. But anyway, I'm looking at them, and I thought about playing it, but you can hear black women on every other show. You're not going to hear them. I'm not going to even give a minute to replaying this clip, but you can imagine what they were saying and mocking Lauren Boebert and Tucker Carlson.
They are often in error, but never in doubt.
And so anyway, but you can watch it for yourself if you want to suffer that at OccidentalDescent.com. And
it's just hard.
And get a look at Sheila Jackson Lee's district.
Can you imagine that we've, as a nation, have elected two stooges, you know, like Sheila Jackson Lee and Steve Cohen?
Well, Steve Cohen's probably got a high IQ. I mean, he's not any good for us, but I don't
he's
know.
He's bad, but look.
Now, he's not the stooge. He's the one. Probably
Sheila
the
Jackson
one.
Sheila Jackson Lee and John Lewis, for example.
Okay, there you go. Now,
yeah. Thing is, these people have no business being on Capitol Hill as representatives of any group of American people.
Of course, John Lewis has gotten his
final reward. Yeah, but see,
I don't know how much of a reward it might be, but
yeah, he came to meet his maker. But what has happened to America? This madness, this mad spell that was put over the American people by the civil rights movement. This sanctimonious stuff. Remember all these changes like Brown versus Board of Education, integrating the public schools? That was going to bring in a new day of achievement for blacks. It hasn't done that. Blacks are worse off. Whites are worse off. And America's public education is sunk from being number one in the world in 1954 to number 38 in the world today at the bottom of the first world. Thank you, civil rights movement. Thank you, liberals. Thank you, Jewish power and influence.
Keith, I'm going to borrow an Alexanderism. When you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jerry Barmash. A Florida woman is facing first-degree murder charges after shooting and killing her terminally ill husband. Police say the victim, Jerry Gillen, was planning to commit suicide inside his Daytona Beach hospital room, but didn't have the strength. His wife, Ellen Gillen, shot him once in the head before barricading herself in the room while police tried to negotiate with her. They say at no time did she make threats to police or hospital staff, but she refused to drop the weapon. A report says Chief of Staff Ron Klain will leave his post in the Biden administration.
Klain is expected to step down from his position in the coming weeks, although the White House is making no comment. According to a report in the New York Times, Klain's resignation would be the biggest staffing shakeup in the Biden administration since taking over the presidency 2 years ago. A formal announcement and the naming of Klain's replacement not expected until after President Biden's State of the Union address on February 7th, although the search for his replacement is already underway. I'm John Schaefer.
President Biden is planning to meet with Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy soon to discuss the debt ceiling. This is reporter Julie Serkin.
Speaker Kevin McCarthy immediately pretty much responding on Twitter to that invitation about a meeting at the White House, saying, quote, President Biden, I accept your invitation to sit and discuss a responsible debt ceiling increase to address irresponsible government spending.
No official time or date has been set. Illegal crossings at the U.S. southern border are hitting record levels. Customs and Border Protection said it stopped more than 250,000 migrants along the Mexican border in December. That's a 7% increase compared to November and reflects a 40% jump from December of 2021. In sports, the Kansas City Chiefs are the first team to advance to the championship round. They defeated the Jacksonville Jaguars on Saturday, 27-20. This is USA News.
Paid for by GovMint.com.
Did you hear? A recent stash of $10 gold Liberty coins from the 1800s has been found. These gorgeous gold coins are as bright and shiny as the day they were struck in the late 1800s, and less than 50 of these gold coins are available. Coin experts are calling this gold find an incredible opportunity. Call 1-888-201-7060, and you are guaranteed a $10 gold Liberty coin minted by the U.S. Mint in the 1800s. But with extremely limited availability, you must call now. These gold Liberty coins from the 1800s are still in uncirculated condition. That is history you can hold in your hand. To learn more, call 1-888-201-7060. Call now and you'll receive a free American Coin Collector's Bonus Package, a $40 value, free with every order. Call 1-888-201-7060 now. to secure your $10 Gold Liberty coins dated from the 1800s before they sell out. That's 1-888-201-7060.
You know, we like to do two things here at TPC. We like to quote polls, and we like to quote Brad Griffin. So, and in no particular order there. Well, there was a shock, and that is in all capital letters, shock poll that just came out. Only 39% of Republicans say that Martin Luther King should have a federal holiday. That is 9 points less than what Republicans thought when the law was signed in 1983. So that, again, goes to show you, ladies and gentlemen, that the white Republican base is moving in our direction.
And people like us and the information we give you on the real Martin Luther King as opposed to the myth of Martin Luther King is having its effect. See, this whole thing about Martin Luther King, it's just, you know, it's just rotten to the core. We couldn't have picked a worse representative to be the, one, a Nobel Prize winner, and two, the face of the civil rights movement. You know, they could have picked Roy Ennis or somebody like this that had a very, you know, relatively clean private life. But no, they picked a plagiarist, a serial adulterer, a serial physical and sexual abuser of women, a Christian heretic. You know, in just about every category of his life, he was deficient. But that's the one that the left has picked to be the great hero of black people and the civil rights movement. Well, he deserves to be the head or the symbol of the civil rights movement because the civil rights movement, just like him, was rotten as could be.
I got a little bit of nuance with you on that. Like, the moral stuff, yes, we should prefer people who are morally sound, I guess. But, you know, ultimately, I'd want somebody who wins. If Donald Trump truly got urinated on by a Russian prostitute, that wouldn't bother me a bit as long as he built the wall. And I'm not trying to be funny here. I'm just saying I'll take a guy who gets the job done for our people, qualms and deficiencies and all, than a nice guy loser like Mitt Romney. And I'm just being honest about that. So some of this stuff about King, yes, he wasn't a Christian. Yes, I mean, he was a degenerate. He was all of these things. That's not necessarily what should discount him. It should be what should discount him was he was not good for our people. And that's just all there is to it. He was not good for our people. And our people are finally beginning to realize that, it appears. So 9 years, excuse me. When Reagan signed this into law, 48% of Republicans thought that it was a good idea. Now 39%, even after all of the incessant Martin Luther King, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Abraham Lincoln propaganda.
We're now 4 years away from the magic date of 2027 when his FBI.
I don't think anybody will care. I mean, we're such degenerates now.
The thing is,
he raped people. He cheated on his wife. Nobody cares about that anymore.
He was setting up other guys to rape women in his congregation.
But we all know that.
Well, look, no, I'm not tired of talking about it because, look, the problem is this guy is the face of the civil rights movement, and he was nothing but a marionette. He was a puppet.
Who ran King?
Jewish power and
influence. That's right. I mean, Jews ran the whole show.
He provided all the money, and all the networking, everything else.
They're all props.
All the sympathetic media coverage that he got. But that was a lie. It wasn't just a lie. It was a damn lie.
That's not the point, though. The point is that our people, white Republicans, now are losing faith that this guy should have a holiday. This is Brad's quote on it. Brad writes, as I've been trying to explain for 2 years now, we have gone mainstream. We have moved out of the edgy vanguard stage as a number of our old ideas, the Great Replacement, national divorce, white Christian nationalism, opposing anti-whiteism, opposing continuing to fund the stupid war in Ukraine, and abolishing the FBI, etc., have reached a new threshold of support since the George Floyd riots. We need to get rid of Martin Luther King Day. We sure need to get rid of Juneteenth. I mean, how ridiculous. We need to get rid of Pride Month. We need to get rid of Happy Holidays. We need to get rid of the whole stupid woke calendar and all of these fake multicultural holidays and progressive heroes. We need to celebrate white Christian heroes like Robert E. Lee and Andrew Jackson and Christian holidays like Christmas and Easter. Those are the only ones that should be, and not only the only ones that should be remembered, but the only ones worthy of remembrance. Robert E. Lee truly was a paragon of virtue.
Absolutely. But see, look at this. If you look at his blog roll, Brad also has an article in there about Kyle Kulinski's response to that poll where support for Martin Luther King's gone down to 39%. See, the left thinks there's no reverse on this buggy. They think that once they win something, it's settled, it's over with.
They're usually right about that, but they, so far.
But see, you know, right now the truth is getting out about Martin Luther King. And, you know, we've seen all these statues going down to Confederate heroes. I'm waiting for the day when the statue to Martin Luther King comes down.
Give me the first hammer. You know, when that becomes legal, I'll be the first one. I'm not going to go to jail.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. I'd hammer.
We're going to play that when we come back.
Yeah,
we
do.
All right, but here's the thing, though. So 39%, this is the thing, though, I want to bring this up about. So we like Lauren Boebert. We like, okay, we like DeSantis to an extent, right? I mean, compared to establishment Republicans or at least left-wing Republicans like Romney and McCain, they seem better. But even Lauren Boebert and Ron DeSantis, amongst any other number of Republicans, Steve King didn't do it. Steve King didn't do it. But on Martin Luther King Day, they all bent the knee and pledged subservience
to
King.
It's like when the freshman class of congressmen get the flight to Tel Aviv, go to the Wailing Wall, have a yarmulke slapped on their head, and kiss the Wailing Wall.
I don't even want to read what they were writing, but it was all just, we stand in awe of Dr. King. We want to live to emulate his example. All this nonsense, and it's totally utter. If there's one person I don't want to be like in America, it's Martin Luther King. But
call ass-kissing.
Here's Lauren Boebert and DeSantis amongst, you know, hundreds of Republicans. But the Republican base is 60-40 against that. 61-39, to be honest with you.
How dare the rest of the Republicans not mirror what their constituents
think? 61% of Republicans say it shouldn't be holiday. 39% say it should.
I like holidays as well as the next guy, but I don't want
to. Okay, give us a day off. Give us Robert E. Lee Day, because it used to be Lee Day, and then it was King Lee. Some southern states still celebrated as Lee Day in conjunction with the federal holiday. I'm all for a day off.
In today's Republican Party, there are damn few authentic candidates for the next edition of Profiles in Courage.
I'll tell you, Steve King wrote something on Martin Luther King Day, not any subservient, grotesque
pandering
to the fake memory of King, but something about, well, let me find it. Now I got to find it now that I'm talking about it, right? Say something while I find it. All right, here we go. I should have had this pulled up, I guess, but okay. What day was King Day?
16th.
The 16th. Let me go back to the 16th. Okay. And he's talking about slavery reparations being a shakedown. That was his part of the King Day post. So, yeah, God bless you, Steve King. And we need more Republicans
That's why he's no longer in Congress, because he dared to tell the truth.
Well, he had 18 years in Congress. He had a good run.
It was the emperor's new clothes. He told the emperor he had no clothes. And the establishment couldn't handle it. But guess what? We can't handle the establishment anymore. You need to pack your bags and go, folks. We need to get real people that are real supporters of the Republican base. And if they won't do it, don't let the door hit you in the ass when you leave.
This is the first time I wanted you to keep talking. Were you? Anyway, so yes, Republicans, do better next year. Try not to pander to King. He was no friend of yours. You know, I wrote an article some years ago. Martin Luther King was a conservative Republican, and this is this whole thing that the Republicans, everything a so-called conservative Republican stood for, he stood against, all the way down to economic and fiscal policy.
I call that the Tea Party syndrome. All those Tea Partiers wanted a black guy on the speaker's dais, you know, because they thought that no idea that a white man has any validity unless you have a black guy in the amen corner endorsing it.
Yeah, this whole thing, Martin Luther King was a Republican. They don't understand, you know, how the parties flipped. And it's so stupid. It's so
Well, I'll tell you why it is, because they haven't realized what we realize, which is that the civil rights movement was just as rotten as transgenderism or anything else.
Okay? And Martin Luther King was not, never was and never will be a hero of mine. Robert E. Lee, Nathan Bedford Forrest, Stonewall Jackson, Charles Martel, John Sobieski, Caesar. I mean, you know, I can get on Both sides. I can get on the barbarian side of the Roman Empire. I can get on the see, all of the, we're all of that. We are all of that. King is none of that.
King is responsible.
Who was the barbarian leader, Vercingetorix? I'm mispronouncing that.
Which one now?
Well, he. Anyway, this.
Odoric?
No, no. I can't pronounce it. I can see his name spelled out, but it doesn't mean.
But anyway, what has happened is that basically we've got inmates running the asylum in America now, and anybody that bows their knee to the civil rights movement tells you that they are deficient mentally. They don't know if they're either a flaming liberal in disguise or they don't understand what's going on.
Vercingetorix was a Gaelic king and a chieftain of what was the Gauls during the Roman. But I can go on both sides of that. I am with Boadicea. I am with the Romans. I am with all of them. They are all me, and we're all part of them, and they're all part of us. King is nothing. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. One more second.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject from the Spanish Civil War to the funding behind the transgender movement. Antelope Hill publishes books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo and brings real culture to the reading public at an affordable price. If you count yourself as a political dissident, you owe it to yourself to check out the Antelope Hill catalog with exclusive offerings like Solzhenitsyn and the Right, the Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more. There's something there for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out the catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com. That's antelopehillpublishing.com. I'm James Edwards, and I want you to go to antelopehillpublishing.com.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey? Well, now you can, thanks to LocalHoneyMan.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at LocalHoneyMan.com.
Well, and away we go, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are now, well into our first month of the new year. It always goes by too quickly. I could say the last 18 years have gone by far too quickly. It seems like Christmas, the Christmas season, went by far too quickly. And now here we are turning the corner on the stretch end of the first month of the new year. And with guests like the ones we have had all month so far, and including tonight, it has gone by once again too quickly. But then in this, our third and final hour, I think I am actually sure of it now as I look. This is the first hour of the entire year that Keith Alexander and I have had entirely to ourselves. And so we're taking a break and catching a breath and catching up on some news and tidying up some of these loose strings that we've had with some of these fantastic guests. And the guests are not going to stop coming as we head into the remainder of January and on into February, and then we get into March around the world. I was actually talking with a friend today. We are already beginning to fill in slots for our March around the world, which has really, I think, become my favorite series throughout the year. I love Confederate History Month. I mean, obviously, April is Confederate History Month on TPC. It has been since our very first year on the air But March Around the World has just been so much fun to produce and to host. We just started that about, 3 years ago? And so we haven't done that for as long. And then just to have exclusively international guests reporting in from their respective ports of call throughout the month of February is something that's just unique and still sort of relatively new. So I have, enjoyed that. And that'll be coming up here pretty soon. But what's coming up now is something that Keith Alexander wanted to cover a couple of weeks ago. We just hadn't had time to work it in yet. So I was afforded the privilege, really, from Paul Angel and John Friend, both friends of ours at the Barnes Review, and they asked me if I would be interested in writing something. Now, I don't really have the time to do a lot of writing anymore. I'm pulled in a lot of different directions for a lot of different reasons, but for the Barnes Review to be published by the Barnes Review, yeah, I would take a moment and do that. So I polished up an article, and Keith read it, and it is in the current January-February 2023 edition of the Barnes Review. If you're a subscriber to the Barnes Review, you will be receiving it soon if you have not already. And Keith, you read it and you liked it, and we put it up on Twitter, we put it up on our website. Tell us what it was all about.
Well, it's a topic that Jane brought to my attention years ago, and that was about a little short movie made by Frank Sinatra in 1945 called The Street Where I Live. Is that what it's called?
The House I Live In,
in which he is basically cautioning some young boys who apparently think highly of him as a singer not to fall for hating other people, particularly Jews, okay? What this shows you...
Exclusively, I think.
Yeah, almost exclusively Jews. But see, and it says that if you hate on that basis, you're a Nazi.
Well, or stupid. You could be either a Nazi or stupid. It's not really... It could be one or the other.
Well, anyway, Frank Sinatra was one of the first people in Hollywood to learn that the secret formula for success in Hollywood was kissing Jewish ass, okay? Let's just put it quite that plainly. That's what happened. And he did it, and that's why he had a career in Hollywood. Now, he was not a daddy-o the way that he's portrayed, at least not... Let me say this. He wasn't a daddy-o in the way that Elvis Presley was a daddy-o. I've never seen pictures of him with girls looking like they did at Elvis. So he's kind of a fake. What he did, he disliked intensely Bing Crosby and Elvis Presley. He disliked Bing Crosby because he saw him as some type of competition to him. On the other hand, same thing for Elvis. What it was, he just couldn't understand that basically singer heartthrobs have a shelf life of about 10 years. Bing Crosby was the top guy in American culture as a male white singer from 35 to 45. Then Elvis was the same thing for from 55 to 65. Frank Sinatra disliked them both, thought that he should be number one, the top banana. But quite frankly, both Bing Crosby and Elvis arguably outdid him in terms of popular acclaim. And, for example, he hated Bing Crosby because when JFK came out to see him, he landed his plane at the airport for Bing Crosby, on Bing Crosby's ranch rather than Frank Sinatra's. Frank Sinatra was a sycophant. And he is the one who tried to basically undermine the careers of both Bing Crosby and Elvis Presley. Both of them were better celebrities than he was. And he also got where he was by pandering to Jews, by making movies like this that were basically a betrayal, a blood libel of his own people, his own white Gentile background. But he's willing to do what it takes to hoist his flag a little bit higher in Hollywood. We need to remember that about Frank Sinatra, okay? He was a big liberal, at least publicly. He was not anybody that the rest of us ought to, hold as some type of role model. He was not at all. And, what he did, he was... the guy that found out and basically made it a formula for success in Hollywood, that if you want to do well in Hollywood on either side of the camera, you need to learn how to ingratiate yourself and grovel before the Jews that owned Hollywood. So I have no respect for Frank Sinatra, and that movie that James pointed to in this article is exhibit one in the case against him. You know, I never saw Elvis make a movie like that. I never saw Bing Crosby make a movie like that, but I saw Frank Sinatra, and Frank Sinatra had mob ties, and he did what he thought he had to do. It's not like they made him do it. He volunteered to do it because he wanted to get the inside track on a good career in Hollywood.
Well, this thing that I point out, too, in this article for the Barnes Review that's in the current edition is that this was a communist production. I mean, that was not a McCarthy thing that these people were communists. They really were communists. That wasn't a slur.
The guy that did the movie, the guy that did the song, they were both Jewish communists.
Well, it was more than that. I mean, it was a production from top to bottom all the way through. It was a communist production through and through. And make no mistake, I mean, the message of the movie wasn't that people shouldn't go around beating up Jews. We don't have a problem with that message because we oppose violence against anyone. But that wasn't the message of the movie. The message of the movie, as I write, was that religion and race are meaningless trivialities. And anyone who disagrees is either a Nazi or stupid. Now, in 1945, that was a radical communist idea, but now it's a mainstream idea.
Well, see, Jewish power and influence had the civil rights movement already on the drawing board in 1945. They did Jimmy Burns out of being named the vice presidential candidate in 1944 for Roosevelt. Roosevelt was the president. Most people realize that Roosevelt had one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel in 1942 when Burns was asked by Roosevelt to step down from the Supreme Court and head up the War Mobilization Office, which he did a wonderful job at doing. But he said at the time, "I will do it if you make me your vice presidential candidate," and Roosevelt said he would, but then he got enormous pressure from Jewish power and influence not to do it. Now, what happened is that Harry Truman, who some people think was a member of the tribe, his middle name was Solomon, by the way, he was known to be a racial integrationist. And if it had not been for him, I don't think the whole civil rights movement would have taken off. Just think of what a different world we would have lived in if Jimmy Burns, a staunch segregationist from South Carolina, a very brilliant man, he was Secretary of State under Truman and things like this, had been the president from 1945 to 1956, rather than Harry Truman and then Dwight Eisenhower, the terrible Swedish Jew, as he was called by his classmates at West Point. That's how leftism, that's how the camel got its nose in the tent and moved us, white Gentiles, out of the tent and moved everyone else, blacks, Jews, anyone else, you know, anyone except a wham, as Paul Craig Roberts calls them, a white, heterosexual, able-bodied male. That's who is at the bottom of the totem pole, and the whole process started after the Jews got through thanking us for winning World War II for them, the people that got, you know, and then he repays us by basically working against us for, you know, the rest of, you know, ever since the end of World War II, that we're still in the process of dispossession of white Gentiles, okay?
It's so awful what happened to Germany. So awful. The two world wars, so awful, brother against brother.
And Roosevelt and Churchill
only our
terrible.
Blood was spilled in that war. I mean, literally.
We had a friend one time that spoke at one of our group gatherings, and he said that Winston Churchill ought to be known as war criminal Churchill, yeah. And he was, and he killed so many.
But he would not
people.
Even entertain the idea of peace with Germany, who were appealing for it time and time again.
And before that, in World War I, the Kaiser was doing the same thing, but Churchill had
bought and bossed.
Well, what he thought was he wanted 1815 to be replayed. He wanted England to be at the top of the pack, like they were right after the Battle of Waterloo. The problem was that Germany became a nation for the first time right after the Franco-Prussian War in 1871 under the guidance of Otto von Bismarck.
Had a fast rise to world power, did they not?
Well,
by 1933, they were the top dog.
They were the first nation of Europe back in World War I and World War II, And England, it's the irony is that despite killing all of these people, Churchill said, "I just love war." Well, because of Churchill, England became the colonies right. by the sea rather than the first power of Europe, which is what
check
he hoped
out
to have.
My article in the Barnes Review, also working on a special book project with Patrick Martin and Michael Hill, 12 different Southern nationalist contributors, writing a chapter apiece. Mine's due by the end of the month. This book's coming out in the next couple of months. I gotta get it in there in the next 10 days. I gotta write a chapter. I'm really looking forward to that. We'll talk to you more about that. For Keith Alexander, our great guests tonight, Sasha Rossmuller and Jim Lancia, I'm James Edwards. Fast start to the year will continue next week. I promise you that, ladies and gentlemen. Good night, Godspeed. If Jesus tarries his second coming, we'll talk to you next Saturday night. Good night.